Mini episode 140 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, welcome to mini episode number 140 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, the Draper and Sterling, if you will, of the FDH Lounge.
I wish I had an old fashioned right now. For that one, so it might be a little bit early.
Old fashioned neat.
Yes.
As we go through this, we talked about it in the first one here, the genesis of Mad Men Season 5, and now we're setting it up to get to the meat and potatoes of it when Shiznit basically got real in Season 5, as Don Draper might perhaps say. It probably wouldn't. But we've got through, again, just laying the foundations for Season 5. The things that left you and I at the early part of it kind of shaking our heads, they were reestablishing things in the first couple of episodes here. Okay, you know, Joan went and pooped out her kid. Roger's basically on the rocks with his old lady. Things are kind of fraying there. Pete has kind of turned back into a jerk face again, which was a little bit of a thing. But, you know, they were basically reacquainting us with their lives.
Yeah, and one thing I was pleasantly surprised with as the season progressed, I love the Roger Sterling characters I mentioned in the first part.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of worried, again, to make another Sopranos comparison here. I know I keep doing this, and that might be laziness, but oh well, I'm on the microphone and you're not. Okay. Is that I really feared as this season started that he was going to be shoehorned into the old Uncle June role, Uncle Junior,
yeah,
on the Sopranos, where it's like, okay, here's this great character, but he's kind of not really essential to the storyline, and he just kind of comes in to tell a couple good one-liners. And he's not really essential to storylines. He's just this good character who's funny and everyone kind of likes. And he's reduced. I didn't want him to be reduced to that. And I loved the episode where, you know, him and Jane took LSD.
Mm-hmm.
For numerous reasons, I love that episode. But
yeah.
I thought it was very good. It kind of got him going again to where he needed. Because in many ways, he was kind of neutered. That was like Sterling's arc that, you know, you talk about.
He was still cheating on her, though. He wasn't completely neutered.
He wasn't, but it wasn't like the good old days of Mad Men, okay? It wasn't like the good old days where it was one every episode, okay?
Yeah.
All right. You know, it was funny in that we talked about the first season. Everything was so happy. Oh, you know, we're having a drink. Oh, look how much money the agency's making. Oh, mm-hmm. Look how happily married I am. And, you know, there was that point, I think I remember, where Roger wanted Don to go out with them, and Don was being all kissy-faced with Megan, and Sterling was like, this blows. You know, like,
that was the same episode, Far Away Places, because I think that's the one where Don and Megan went to the disastrous Howard Johnson's date that they went on. Remember that?
Yes.
He left her at a Hojo's?
Yes.
Way to go, Don.
I'm not talking about the third baseman of the Mets back in 87 either.
No.
Okay.
Well, just because she didn't like sherbet, that's a little harsh, Don.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, come on. You know, a man buys you a nice dessert. I mean, the least you could do is try it.
let's face it. We've all abandoned women in public places for less than turning down a bowl of orange sherbet.
Yes, Cuban V. But, you know, so Sterling, I think where he's at is okay. But it's very clear that his character maybe has a ceiling to it now.
Right.
Because, you know, his role. But in many ways, I thought it was kind of cool, the dynamic of him and Pete Campbell.
Yeah.
Because it sort of addressed my concerns about the Sterling character that, okay, well, am I important around here anymore? It's
right.
Like my name's on the marquee. It's first.
Right.
I've been around here forever. You know, I've kind of got everything. I'm rich. I bang lots of chicks. You know, I should be happy, but what am I, you know, I'm coming to work every day.
He was
day.
Doing a lot of modern day hip hop during the season, making it rain with Peggy, with Ginsburg, whatever. He was carrying out a fat roll everywhere.
And that was kind of funny. I mean, that was kind of funny, but, you know, the dynamic with him against the younger,
yeah,
more ambitious, but more unlikable Pete Campbell, I thought that was
full on douche. Pete just regressed completely. Pete was like season one Pete.
Pete Campbell needs to be a heel.
Okay.
To do it that way. He is like, he wants to be Don Draper.
Right.
But he's never going to be. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'm sure some great comparison I could come up with. You know, pro wrestling or not.
Right.
That of the Pete Campbell, Don Draper dynamic, but it's escaping me at this time. But, yeah, he was, although I do kind of like when he just called the guy out on the last episode on the train. Where he's like, yeah, I was doing your wife.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. Yeah.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, he needs to work on his selling of the conductor's punch. That was a little, that was a little comical, I think.
I saw a little white there. Yeah, yeah.
That was a little comical, yeah. I thought. You know, I mean, I was like, come on, Pete, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, at least work in the Kurt Hennig flip or something, you know. I mean, back into the cushion.
Not exactly a little guy-esque bump there, I'll tell you. Yeah, but that was
a flare flop, perhaps, down the aisle, yes.
Exactly. But that whole thing, that arc that he was on during the season with the other guy's wife and everything like that, that whole aspirational thing, yeah, he clearly, and you could see it was the episode with the dinner party where Don came over, Signal 30, that was the one, he desperately wanted to be like Don, and again, just fell short in every way.
Yeah, everyone comes over. Oh, what a fine home you have.
Right.
Oh, you're so great at your job.
Right. But then at dinner, not only does Don fix the sink there, but during dinner,
that's a great, you know, yeah, that's great. I forgot about
there, and that thing, and Don's got his shirt off, and the women are swooning and everything. And it's just hilarious.
Do you know who nailed the Don Draper character better? And this is funny because I think some people will be mad that I'm going to say this.
Who?
But I'm right, so deal with it.
Who?
Do you know who nailed the interpretation of the Don Draper character the best, I thought, in the most appropriate, was Saturday Night Live when John Hamm hosted. Remember when, like, they did that skit where, like, he could do no wrong?
Right.
Like, remember, I can't remember, he had these great lines, and it was, like every woman wanted him, no matter what he did, every woman wanted him, and he...
Here's the thing, though. Here's what's so funny about that. I was flashing back because Far Away Places, the Hojo's / Acid episode, was the week after Signal 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking to myself, as he's driving around looking for Megan, would anybody at that dinner party have believed that he would have screwed the pooch like that? It is so stark, the difference between perception of Don and reality of
That's
Don.
True. Yeah, it was like
Don nobody would have thought he would have been a screw up like that, Kyle. Nobody.
Yeah, you're right, because
Pete would have felt better about himself if he knew Don would have done something.
Yeah, because
like
back to the Betty thing, like,
yeah,
Betty would have like probably eaten the ice cream and smiled.
Right.
You know, oh, this is so great, of course, Don, this is the best dessert. You know, where Megan kind of took that mocking tone.
Right.
Which kind of upset me personally as a man, I'll be honest. I didn't really like I thought she was a little out of line.
Well, she was still being snarky because she was pulled out of the office, which that was a little confusing because we saw later on it's not like the work meant that much to her anyways. Now,
true,
she was a dependable person, and I think she didn't want to feel like she was pulling rank by leaving the office. I guess that's part of it too, her moral code and everything like that. I'm the boss's wife pulling rank. She didn't want to be that person, but it's a thing. I also go to the other thing at the dinner party too, somebody that we're not going to be talking a whole lot about during the season, but he's a part of the agency, Ken Cosgrove. Ken was the other guy at the dinner party getting fawned over because of his writing. Everybody was talking about the science fiction writing. His wife
was
putting him over like a million bucks.
And Pete was pissed about that, too. And by the way, I loved, as someone who always this happens to, mm-hmm, I loved the part of that dinner party when Don and Megan couldn't remember the name of his wife.
Yeah.
And
hello, somebody you!
Said it, and then probably someone said it, and Megan shouts out, oh! What's funny is I actually can't remember her name right now, or
even
the character's name
either.
Escapes me.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I'm always like that. I'm like, hey, I'm like, hey, let me introduce you to this person so, you know, I could get to remember their name again.
Yeah.
So I thought that was tremendous.
That was. Well, I got to tell you, too, and it's one of the funny things in watching the show and in relating to the show is that there's a guy that I grew up with, I would say a now estranged childhood friend, the kind of person that you basically grow away from when you get to be older and you realize you didn't have as much in common, but a real Pete Campbell kind of a Pete Campbell archetype to the core. And one of the reasons that we grew apart...
Can you mention
apart,
this person by name?
It's nobody that you know, so it's not even worth... I'll tell you off.
You don't want to throw them out.
No,
I think you've
I
actually
wanna...
told me before.
Okay, okay, but this is...
I just really wanted you to... I just wanted you to kind of just publicly throw someone under the... I'm not going to lie.
Who'd you mean to look?
Okay. I just wanted you to publicly bury some guy.
All right. But that's... And that's the funny thing. I took one of these character tests. I think I was on Facebook the one time, and it told me that I was Ken Cosgrove. And I had to laugh because the way that Pete resents Cosgrove is the same way that this erstwhile friend resents me. Then if you're like the bitter kind of a person and you blame other people, and he was always like pissed that I had more friends than he did. Like, why does Rick have friends? He doesn't contrive to impress people like I do. It was one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how they nail these characters. I mean, Matthew Weiner and his writing crew. I mean, Pete Campbell, you're right about this. The way that he's regressed
about as,
this
he's
year,
about as unlikable.
Fundamentally.
When you look at the entire show history as a whole, Pete Campbell, even way more so than like Betty Draper.
Oh, yeah.
Is the by far
Betty
the least.
Betty has her moments.
Yeah, when it's like, okay, or like you kind of feel bad, you know,
right.
Okay, you know, maybe she's a little snooty, but I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, well, what did she do? I mean, she's
right.
She's a good looking woman who,
right.
You know, I mean, just wants to be completely taken care of.
Right.
You know, Pete Campbell is like, you know, it's like, what are you complaining about, pal?
Well, I'll tell you what, too. The feel good moment of the season by far.
Oh.
In Signal 30, Lane beats the crap out of him in the conference room.
That was
here,
a great
the throwdown.
Moment. Yeah, when
that was incredible.
You know, Sterling's like, "Am I the only one who wants to see this?"
Yeah.
And even Don.
And Don, who pulls the curtains.
And he's got this smirk on his face, which is very, you know, Don's usually very, like, mechanical, okay, you know, thinking business. And he just has this hilarious smirk, and he shuts the curtains.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow.
And Pete's waiting for Don to step in because
that's
Don, 99 times out of 100, Don would be like, okay, look, let's that. Like, but, if they were in a partners meeting, Don would go to diffuse something, whatever. In this moment, Don wants to see it as bad as anybody else.
And that made
I
thought that moment made, because Sterling, you expect the wisecrack
right.
from, but Don,
right.
you know, kind of having this smirk like, hey, I'm in for this too, but I'm not being the bigger man here. I'm close. Yeah, that was great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really was something. And Lane Price's big moment of triumph during the season.
Well,
I mean, there would not be any bigger plummet from big moment to low moment in the season other than what Lane Price would see. Nobody outdid him in that score. The one thing I've seen that I thought was, some people have thought this was a little bit contrived, how quickly in the last couple of episodes they went back to the Lane Price financial problems thing. I think it had always been hinted at that he had never gotten as good of a stake in the company or whatever,
yeah,
but
you know,
it was sudden.
I kind of had to look that back up because when they called him, because
right.
the episode where they kind of reintroduced that plot.
Right.
I think that was like it was kind of like a cold open with that.
Yeah.
Where like he was on the phone and he's like, okay, yeah, I'll pay you. I'm like, wait, what does he owe? Like, you know,
right.
why is he not loaded or, you
yeah.
know, did I miss something? I was kind of confused
by
that.
People speculated that because of the budget cuts with the show, there weren't stark budget cuts, but that was part of the renegotiation here. You got to pay these guys every time they're in a show. So rather than put him in a previous episode just briefly, they decided to shoehorn the whole thing into its own episode of where his downward spiral starts. And it would have seemed more organic, I think, had it been 1, 2, 3 episodes further with a hint. But those were episodes he just wasn't in, because if you remember, you didn't see much, if at all, of him between him knocking the crap out of Pete and his problems there. There was almost nothing of Lane Price in between.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, again, with him meeting his untimely demise, and that was obviously the big, you know, that most people kind of hail that as the most memorable show of the season, where Lane hangs himself. I wasn't, like, it was one of those things that the character, I think, had kind of gone everywhere it was going to go.
Right.
Like, you know, sometimes you can't wait for, you know, there's some episodes, like, here's a perfect example. I don't know if you don't have HBO, so you're just going to look at me, okay. Okay. That sounds great. So, but for everyone who does, like on The Sopranos, like I couldn't wait for Paulie Walnuts to be killed off.
Okay.
And it just didn't happen. It's like, come on. Like, this guy's like, he's sort of annoying now. You know, he's been on the show. He's never going to be, you know, advanced past where he's at. Just kill it. He's dead weight. He's the Kane of The Sopranos.
Poor Glenn Jacobs.
Yes. Whereas a show like The Wire, I remember when they killed off Stringer Bell, I was like, no!
Spoiler alert!
I was like, no! I like Stringer Bell. He had so much more to do. He wanted to be a legitimate businessman. Why would you kill him off? So with Lane Price, it was kind of in between that. I was like, okay, you know, they had, what kind of sealed his fate, though, is when Don... It was far more shocking when Don's like, yeah, I need your resignation, man.
Yeah.
Because that sort of, what's he going to do? Like, if he's fired, he at that point, he becomes his character becomes worthless to the show because all he was kind of the British money man of the program.
But there were nuances to it that made it even all the more heartfelt. Like, you see, you know, like as they're leaving the room or after they cut his body down, the little Mets pennant that was always there, you know, in his office. And it's a thing of where, and a lot of this is just stuff where you more or less have to embellish or fan wank, but they kind of hinted at it. They're like, look, this guy came to the country right about the same time that the Mets, you know, came in. This guy loves America. He's embraced America. We know from watching the show now he offed himself 2 years before the Miracle Mets. So there's like a little bit of a poignant kind of a thing there.
Oh, sure. I mean,
a symbol of what he's leaving behind. Not nearly as much as his family, but just like in a tiny token kind of a thing. It shows you that. It shows you what he was leaving behind.
And I think moving forward, one of the real big things that has to be, they have to go back to, is the fact that Don knows why he offed himself and no one else does. You know, I mean, that was the big thing when they're all sitting there crying, why would he do this? This is a resignation letter. Why?
Like, I think in the last episode, they basically indicated, particularly because I was waiting for the other shoe to drop with the finances, the $50,000, but they're swimming in cash now. I don't think that part's going to come back up again other than
you don't Don, think you don't think no. this is going to come back to bite Don.
No,
that's I don't know if I like that.
Other than Don's conscience. Well, this is and this is the thing too in that meeting with Elaine, and it's really I'm glad they tied it back in the last episode with because you saw it hinted at the end of the episode where Elaine hanged himself of Don flashing back to his brother.
Yeah.
Because Don as the ultimate guy able to reinvent himself. That is one of the fatal flaws that he has in relating to other people. He cannot grasp that he has the superhuman strength of will to I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to reinvent myself. Just go do it, Lane. Just make it happen. To people as fundamentally flawed as Lane Price, for whom literally pride killed him. His pride killed him. Roger has that much in walking around money. He could have gotten that from the firm had he just asked for it.
Yeah.
They'd have given him that advance, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. And those episodes there toward the end of the season, you know, really, I mean, Pat, you talked about the two masterpieces. That one came right after Commissions and
second to last were the two best episodes.
Yeah, Commissions
along with
and
the
Feast.
LSD episode.
And then, you know, the other woman, the one where, and again, they drew the whole thing there between Peggy and between what she did and what Joan did. Peggy gets the job at the other place there, and then Joan, this hooking storyline that comes out of nowhere.
Which, by the way, it took me a week. You would, we need to discuss something, I believe, by the way.
Okay.
I think you and I, there's a lot of things going through my head right now, and we can't get off track.
Okay.
I think you and I need to firmly establish a rule for all the listeners. What is proper protocol in this DVD, or this DVR, pardon me, DVR world of texting people and posting on Facebook? Because I had heard from everyone, you included, that the two episodes that I had missed were, like, amazing.
Just epic.
And I was, like, afraid to go on Facebook. Like, I just flat out said I will not go on Facebook Sunday night either because I knew I was going to miss it because I don't want to read something. Thank God I didn't. But I remember you had at first said, and it was a very innocent text, and it was, I mean, didn't like ruin anything, but a Pete Campbell pimping ain't easy text, which was, you know.
You had me going, what the hell is this?
Yeah. And what's funny is I couldn't even like listen to the dialogue between him and Joan because I'm just sitting there laughing. And I'm like, I was watching the episode by myself, and every time they show Pete, I just sound like, pimping ain't easy. But.
Well, you could say enhanced the viewing experience for you.
Yes, you know, I don't mean to be crass or anything, but if we wrapped up Lane Price, because I did want to go to
Peggy.
Yeah, I mean, it was on time, but I think, so with Peggy and Joan, I think it's wonderful, Ricky, that, because I certainly want to talk about Peggy, and I think you're right.
Right.
I wasn't even going to do it, because I'm not smart enough like you, to do the comparison contrast with Joan.
Well, I think they beat us over the head with it because it was the same episode, really.
That's true, but I'm, you know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the drawer, you know, or the shed, but, you're right, and it fit both characters perfectly.
And that's what I meant earlier on. They were true to the early season arcs of the characters. If Joan was going to get left by her husband with a kid, this is what early season, you would think early season Joan would do later on. This is what you would think Peggy would do once she gets a taste of rising through the ranks, and then whatever, this Michael Ginsburg comes along and eclipses her. And as I think it was Freddie Rumsen, who, which is very fitting of the whole dynamic, because he literally was brought back from early seasons. As he said to her, you need to go to a place where you're a star walking in the door from day one, not somebody that was promoted from being a secretary where they think they're doing you a favor by letting you contribute to the creative, because you're a star and you need to be seen as that. And it was hinted at, like, way previously, like at the end of season three when they set up the new agency, Don said to her then, you know, that if I lose you, I will spend the rest of my life trying to get you back. She, you know, she's going to be back at the firm at some point. Don is not going to rest till he makes it happen, but she'll come in as more of an equal, and that will make it all the more fascinating.
You know what I think is interesting? This is the way my warped mind works. Mm-hmm. Which one, if either, is Don most likely to have sex with?
Who? Joan or Peggy?
Yes.
It's Joan. Joan by far.
Okay, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't mean in the purient male. Obviously, there isn't a man alive who would rather have sex with
Joan.
I'm not
even talking about that. I mean, it is such that I was almost theorizing that the blackout that New York City suffered in 1977, I think, was an 11-year delayed reaction to the chemistry overload of Don and Joan in that. Holy crap. You talk about biggest sexual tension scenes in the history of TV, dude.
And I'm worried because I'm like you. Well, no. I'm worried that they're not going to because after that, it's like, oh, this makes sense. Because I was with you. When they're at the bar, I'm like, this makes sense.
But the last two episodes, it's kind of
the alpha male, alpha female of the episode of the.
But the last two episodes showed that Joni's up for anything. Even when she said to Don in the last episode, she basically insinuated because she didn't know why Elaine killed himself either. More or less, was like, oh, if I just let him bang me, then maybe he'd still be alive. Joan's up for anything. It'll happen. Mark it down.
Mark it an eight, dude.
Yeah.
Okay. Will he have sex with both of them? Let's set odds.
Because
I'll be honest with you, they had me because I think he's attracted to both of them, but for obviously very different reasons.
Right.
When they were sitting in the movie theater, and you know, Don, he was kind of like Don was lucky, and he ran into her at the movie theater towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wait a minute. For the first, it wasn't the first time that I picked up. I was like, are these two going to get it on?
Well, here's the thing, though, and there's been speculation about that.
You know me. I think you should get it on with both.
Yeah, at the same time, preferably.
Yes.
Yeah. And with Bob Crane's film guy working the tripod.
Yes, yes.
But here's the thing, though. There's been speculation as far back as the suitcase episode, mid-season four, when him and Peggy bonded over that overnight thing when Anna Draper died and Peggy was there for him. I've read it online. Honestly, the guy that was the real wife, Don Draper, that a lot of this is based off of, the second wife or whatever it was that he settled down with ultimately was like his big creative, not necessarily co-equal, but that if you look at the real life thing, the way that it went, and the guy that Don Draper is based off of, not that there actually was a Don Draper, but that he basically married his Peggy and of his agency, so that it may be going there at some point. What I find very interesting in your speculation on that is Don was really, for as much as, you know, Bert said he was on love leave the first part of the year, and Don wasn't taking work as seriously mm-hmm. because he was a neutered guy, the one thing that he really did love about everything like that, and where his disillusionment set in with Megan when she quit work to go acting, he loved that they were doing the stuff together. He loved that they were part of the creative process together, and that's where a Don-Peggy thing subsequently could make sense.
Yes.
Because part of the Megan attraction.
After that fell apart,
yeah.
I was like, that really picked up. I was like, oh, wow, she's into it.
Yeah.
You know, she's into advertising. She's ambitious. You know, I mentioned this to you off air.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as a man, it's very difficult to ever identify with a female character on a show.
Right.
That's just natural.
Right.
You know, that's not being sexist, okay?
Right.
You know, it's just very natural because, you know, you just don't need. I'm a man. The character's a woman. There's just not a lot. You know, there's some certain things. But I'll tell you what. Peggy Olson, I like her character a lot. I like mm-hmm. where it's going. And I identify with her character a lot. You know, she's kind of in this world, you know, the show's taken some criticism for not, I don't want to say succumbing, but not, you know, exploring many of the traditional liberal themes of the 1960s that most shows set in the 1960s explore.
Well, as they get into 1967 and 68,
it'll be more tough
on the back end of the show.
But Peggy, in many ways, was kind of like she was younger, obviously.
Yep.
Was the token liberal. By the way, I'd like to back up. Those criticisms are unfair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, they showed things like the civil rights movement. They,
right.
they had a nod to it, but those people are insulated.
Right.
You know, those were the people in many regards. You know, for Don to, like, wake up out of bed one day and be like, you know what, you know, I'm gonna go march with Martin Luther King. You know, that's,
right.
that wouldn't make sense.
Paul Kinsey would do that, and he also became a Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like, the goofy marginal characters of this thing are going to identify with the outside
because they're
things.
Younger, but Don,
right.
he grew up in a world, he succeeded because of that world. Why would he want to change? That's just natural.
Right.
I'm sorry, you know, I mean,
right.
I'm sorry, Larry, I mean, you know me, I'm
right.
as liberal as they freaking come.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, Barack Obama ought to be ashamed of himself for the way he conceded on the Dodd-Frank Act, okay? But, I mean, for this, it doesn't really fit a lot of the traditional explorer yet.
Right.
It'll be interesting where they go, because you're right, 67, 68, 69, oh boy, does it get hot and heavy.
We will be seeing Don yeah. Draper in a Nehru jacket at some point.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know.
But no, they're on the side of the fence that isn't romanticized about. You know,
Although, remember, how far is Roger going to go down that path, though?
He can't. That's what I'm saying. They're the establishment. Okay, most people, when a show explores the 60s,
yeah.
it's from the counterculture as the protagonist perspective.
Right.
This show is not... All the main characters are going to be antagonists to the counterculture movement.
That's true.
So it'll be interesting how they deal with that. But back to Peggy, she's kind of like token liberal, you
right.
know, after Paul left.
Right.
You know, because she was younger. But at the same time, I kind of liked it because, you know, where I fall, again, on the political side of the fence. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's also very ambitious, you know,
right.
a whore for money. You know, not a whore in the literal sense, a whore mm-hmm. for money. You know, and I thought kind of as the young professional who felt underappreciated, I really found myself liking, you know, just because I've been very hard on some of the other female characters on the show so
mm-hmm.
far. I just like to, you know, publicly state I like her character.
Okay. Yeah, I understand what
that was the
what
point of
saying.
That whole diatribe / soliloquy.
Okay.
As
I
bloviate.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Screamin' A. Smith.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill O'Reilly, for the bloviating.
Yes. Oh, did he steal that from Bill O?
Yeah, he did.
Did
yeah.
he? Who
yeah.
came first? Who? Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure it was probably Bill O.
Really?
Yeah.
Over Screamin' A?
Yeah, I think it was Bill O.
Who would have thought?
Could, yeah.
You know, Bill O'Reilly might off himself if he realized that Screamin' A is using
might,
his yeah. verbiage.
He might go the Lane Price route.
Yes.
But you look at where all of this went, and we've touched on, I think, most of the characters here and where they're going through the course of the season. Haven't talked much about a guy who got put into the mix earlier in the season, Michael Ginsberg being the other writer there. You saw in the last episode, he is somebody who had, he's kind of struggling without her there at the end, with Peggy, particularly on the female products.
Yeah.
That's going to be very interesting to watch also.
Could he be a more likable Pete Campbell that settles in, that is a better challenger to the Don Draper throne?
Could be. You saw
it. Because, you know, I think at this point you know Pete Campbell, unless if he pulls some real dirty trick that would only be temporary,
right,
is never going to be ahead of Don on the pecking order.
Right.
Could this Ginsberg be the one that that is?
Well, here's the thing, though. I think what you're going to see is this was Don's nadir professionally during the season
yes.
here, and he left Michael's thing in the cab and sabotaged him. If this is the old Don Draper coming back, The old Don Draper could lap a guy like Ginsberg
yeah,
in his
sure.
sleep.
Yeah.
He was Ginsberg is really talented, but Ginsberg Ginsberg's only better than a Don Draper off his game.
Yes. Okay.
We're gonna see a Don Draper on his game next year. Although again, one of the interesting things also too, I know you're a big Beatles guy, it was really symbolized
oh,
in
we
the
never
episode.
How did we never talk about that?
That was
a big deal, you know, at least in the news, just for how much they paid for that.
They paid for that. That was part of the backdrop of the year, along with Richard Speck and the Bell Tower shootings and everything else. But the use of that song, here's the thing, though.
I was so happy when they played it again during the credits, too, because I was like, don't you cut that off.
Don was reliant on Megan for the youth culture aspect of this, staying hip to what's happening on that. So that's going to be a big thing next year. Yeah, we got a Don Draper back on his game, and maybe it'll be a Don Draper who's making more contacts through his carousing and whatnot with the younger culture. But for Don to keep his finger on this, or maybe Peggy comes back to the agency and she's the one that's able to do this, but that's the equalizer with Don. Don is on the other side of that divide, so he can be the old Don Draper all he wants, but I think we're seeing that that's for better and for worse professionally.
I would totally agree. I think that was a phenomenal answer to a very just kind of random question.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
But I think the big cliffhanger, and this was very explicit, mm-hmm. I mean, everyone caught on to it, I think, is do we do away with neutered Don in season 6?
I think so.
Because it obviously, you know, spoiler alert, but anyone who watched, you know, the two random women, you know, the one are sitting there, they're very
yep.
lovely looking. The one comes up to him and says...
It says that, are you alone?
Well, yeah.
What do you think the answer is going to be?
I think yes. I think yes.
I think so, too.
I think yes.
I think so, too. We'll see what happens in season 6. Thanks for joining us.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.